Helen, I'd like to begin today by asking you, who were the people who joined the union? You talked before about your feelings about the union and why you didn't join, and I'm wondering who the people were that joined, or if you knew people who joined the union.
Oh, it's been so many years ago.
I don't mean names, I mean just...
Oh, well, some of the girls did. In fact, just the other day, I think I told you about, we had a carpool. We used to, I'd drive 1 week and this lady drive another, and I knew where she lived, and I hadn't seen her in years. So the other day I was over at Dooley's, and she lived right in back of Dooley's, and so I went over to her, and she was there. But she'd been retired 12 years. But she, I knew, I'm quite sure she belonged to the union. But she didn't like it. There were so many things, you know, I don't know. For my part, I didn't want to be involved with it. But I know there were quite a few of the girls that did, and there was a lot of us older ones that didn't. You know.
Was it mainly the older ones that didn't join?
Mostly. The younger ones were more for it than the older ones, because, well, the younger ones probably had an idea that they would stay on and work, where the older ones knew the minute we had a chance to get out, we were out. And you don't get a chance, truthfully, to, unless you do that, to know what's going on. They would have these big rally things, you know, to get you to work you up to join it, but it never appealed to me.
Before you worked at Douglas, had you had any experience at all working with mechanical things, with tools, or...
Only around the house. I could handle things around. I still, if I want to, I can repair, like, my iron cord and, like, the fan cord. I can still do that. That's the only experience I ever had was that.
Mm-hmm. You did that before?
Oh, yeah, I did that for years. You know, when you have a house and your husband's not there and the iron goes out, you know what's the matter with it, so you get the screwdriver out and fix it.
What do you think learning those mechanical skills did for you? Learning those new skills that you learned at Douglas?
Well, truthfully, outside of the metal work, my husband did an awful lot of that stuff, and watching him, I had a faint idea of what all it was about, because he didn't work too much with metal. He did some, but when he did, I wasn't around, because he'd do that more at his work. But I had a slight idea, you know, I could handle a hammer and I could handle a screwdriver and the drill was new. And of course, the bucket of the rivets, that was terrible. You know, did you ever watch men on the street with that air thing that break up the pavement? If you don't think that shakes you up, try it once. That's what the rivet gun did. It sure shakes you up.
If you're inside.
Oh, now.
Did very many of the men make passes at the women?
Not that I ever saw. We had, at that time, you see, we had more older men. We had very few young men. Very few. Mostly all older men who had families. And in my area, I never saw anything of it. That doesn't mean there wasn't. Of course, there's a lot of for the pretty girls that went by, you know, even though they, when men stop looking, they're dead. But nothing out of the way that I ever saw. Especially, you must remember, when you work in a place like that, you're confined to a rather small area. You're not in a big, you're in a big building, but what you are, you're confined to your group. But we had a real nice, the only young person we had in our group was the lead man. And he was just a kid around 3-4 years old. And he was mainly there to avoid going to any service. He wasn't worth his salt. Which was a trifle irritating, you know, when a lot of us older women and, you know, of course, there's a lot of younger ones too working. to keep that going. He's sitting behind the wings thing, playing mumbly page with his knife.
Were there ever women who were accused of being lesbian?
Never heard of it. Never heard of it. You know, this is all... I suppose it was going on, but they didn't talk about it. Until this last big deal that they come out of the closet, you know, as they call it, I never heard much of it. I was really dumb. And I know we had, it goes back many years ago, we had this family then, time they had two children, a girl and a boy, and the girl was, well, the future, but he had long fingernails, and he was polishing like a girl, and he walked like a girl, and everybody said he was, they said he was odd or something, I don't know. You know, for years and years, I never knew nothing about that, but he was I guess you'd call a homosexual. We called him queer. We didn't know what else was going on. But I never knew a girl. I've only known one in my lifetime, and I worked with her at the doctor's office. And she's the only one that I could ever recall ever having any contact with. And I like her. Still like her. Well, she's different from the rest of us. There was a young fellow moved in across here, and the neighbor up the street, she right off, she said that he was homosexual. You know, I hate to see things started like that when you have no proof of it. He'd come over here and give me a cell phone number when we were having a little break-in over here, you know. He was as nice as he could be. I never saw him, you know. But I've never had too much contact with her, you know, so I made a sheltered time, you know.
in the plant at Douglas, how did the white workers feel about minority workers?
I don't know. We didn't have any. We didn't have the influx of Mexicans. We had some. And I don't recall ever seeing but one colored girl, and she was over in another area. She wasn't in our area. We had a Mexican girl in our area, and she was our good worker. She was one of the best. I remember she'd bring me hot taco things to eat, you know. So she brought me one. Oh, my word, I thought I'd die before I'd get to some water. And she just eat it all with nothing. But we had very few. The influx of Mexicans and others has come in since all that. I was back here, I remember, back in the 40s. We didn't have that much of it then. But I didn't see that they were treated any different from anybody else. I mean, as far as I can see.
Did you ever hear of incidences at all?
No. Everything was... Not that they weren't out there. I'd see them going out as we go out and all, but they weren't in our area, so I had no contact much with them. But I never heard of any. Mm-hmm. I imagine today it's a different story because we have so many more of them in here since they've come in across the border and what have you. And all these have let in from Korea and all these other places, you know. It irritates me when I go in the store and they try to wait on me and they can't understand what I'm saying, or I can't understand what they're saying. I just politely lay it down and leave. I thoroughly think that if they're going to be in this country, they're going to have to learn the language here. I don't think we have to... You won't go to any other country where they'll print English for you in their country. No way. You can't talk and understand that stuff. But I never had much contact with them until of late years.
What did you do in your spare time?
Well, I tell you, that's when I learned to smoke like a steam engine. We'd sit out in the sun if it was cool. Well, of course it was the winter time. We'd sit out along the side where the sun was. Some carried their lunches. We'd have our lunches out there, you know, and we'd smoke as many cigarettes as we could devour. Then we'd have a break every so often. We'd go outside and smoke some more. We didn't ever smoke in the building, you know. But I'll tell you, if you try to buck those rillets like you do when you go outside and you're shaking, so you got to do something so you smoke cigarettes. Even though you can hardly handle, hold it, just shaking. So. But we didn't have, there wasn't anything much you could do. You didn't have that long a break.
What about when you were at home, your spare time at home?
Oh. Well, a housewife has things that have to be done, you know. You have, even though you're working, you're home, you have to keep your home up. And I'd have washing to do, have ironing to do, cooking to do. I know I worked nights because I had this daughter, so I could be home, at least be there and keep them, you know. And I'd get home probably around between 7:30 and 8 in the morning, time to see she's off to school, all right. And then after I'd do a little few things around, I'd go to bed. I was so tired. And I'd sleep 15 minutes, and I'd wake up and think I'd slept for hours. I didn't sleep well in the daytime. But you just do your normal things that you have to do, and you let a lot of other things slide.
What kinds of social things did you and your husband do?
Well, mostly we'd go to church Sunday morning and relax the rest of the time. Take a ride. We had gas rationing in those days, you know, but being we both worked, we had gas. And we'd take a ride to the beach and sit and watch the ocean. And we'd go around to Redondo Beach out there. They had a place where you could buy smoked fish, you know, and I'd take along some crackers and beer, and we'd sit there and eat smoked fish and watch the birds and watch the ocean for a couple hours. You couldn't go very far because you didn't have that much gas. And we didn't, other than that, I don't really remember we ever did anything much of anything. Had company come in now and then, cook a little dinner, something. Not too often. Be too tired.
Did you do things with women that you met at the plant?
No. No. After the war was over and we weren't working, I had a couple of three different ones that we visited by. But one that she lived, I don't know if she's still living or not, she lived over in Almaty. She moved from here to Almaty, and we used to visit back and forth. We'd go to their place for Sunday dinner, and they'd come to our place for Sunday dinner for years. And I don't know what happened. I don't hear of them anymore. I don't know what happened to them. And I still have contact with two from out there. This one that I never worked with her, but we had the carpool. And the other one, she lives right over here, Ruth Grimlin. She was in my group. And then there was several others that, we'd meet occasionally, but no, nothing social much, you know, just meet at stores. So.
Did you have women friends during that time that you
spent
time with?
Well, you see, we were pretty new here in this country. We came out here, well, you know, and I went to work in July, a lot of part of July in 42. And we didn't know anybody out here, but except that we'd go to the church affairs. And I met a number of ladies that we were very, very close friends through all the years. And a number of them have passed away. There are still, I think, there are two that we're still very close friends after all these years. A lot of the others have passed away, moved away, and that very thing. But we had it. play bridge, you know, and to get together and have food. I got in with a group of girls that needed a substitute. And that started probably in the latter part of 42 and lasted up until about 3 years ago. And out of that, there were 12 of us. And out of that group, I couldn't tell you how many had passed away till we were down to one table. Then one of the girls had a cerebral cancer operation, and she's still living, and she and her husband and some relatives told us that we've never played bridge since. I played a bridge club all those years. But other than that, none from the plant, though. That was just church groups. St. Anthony's down here on Market and London. And there are two that still live close around here that I'm very close with, and that one that moved over to Hemet, or Sanya Simple, really. And we were very close, and we corresponded there. Her husband passed away, but we still corresponded. But she never drove a car, so she doesn't get around, and I don't like to drive anymore, so I don't drive. But we never forget birthdays or Christmas, you know. I think it's always kind of funny about friends, that when I make a good friend, we're forever together. That's like this Evelyn that worked for me so long ago. I met her at the bank first month we moved out here. And we've been just real close friends ever since. She's one that has cancer along now, very bad.
How did you and your husband make decisions during that time?
Well, very easy. My husband was the type, he worked hard all week, and he'd bring his paycheck home and lay it on the table. Whatever I did with it was fine. He didn't know whether I spent it, how I spent it, but everything, all bills were paid. A little was put in the bank. He never liked to carry money with him at work because a lot of those fellows gambled, and they gambled a paycheck away before they'd get home. He never cashed his paycheck. He signed it and laid it on the table. And when my check come home one time, I showed it to him, he didn't pay attention to it. Whatever I did was fine with him. We never had much arguments about money. He said, I don't want more than $2 or $3 to work with me, because if he didn't have it on, he couldn't loan it to somebody.
What kind of things would you argue about?
You know, that's a peculiar question for me. We didn't argue too much. Mostly, the biggest argument was over the way the young kids would act, you know, like the youngest one. Now, she had it's a terrible mistake. I don't know if you call it a mistake or not, but it's a terrible ordeal for a child to be uprooted from their home at the age of 12 years old, taken away with no anybody and everything, you know. And she had ideas. She didn't want to do this, she didn't want to do that, and she'd give us a hard time. He didn't like to make the decisions. He would abide by what I made, and he'd back me up. But there were times I thought though I had made the decision, he should say it. And I remember this one time, she was going down to St. Anthony's High School, and she'd ride the bus. And I assumed she went to school. Well, I got a call from the sisters, and what was wrong with Shirley Fitz? She hadn't been attending school that week. Well, I pinned her down, but she and two of the other girls were skipping school and going to the beach. They weren't doing anything out of the way, they were just going to the beach. So finally I said to her, Dad, you've got to tell her that if she does it again, that she really was in trouble. He said, well, he wasn't going to say anything bad. And I said, well, he had to. My voice had lost its authority. But when he said it, it was another story. And I remember when he sat down on her that morning before they he went to work. They had quite a set too. She didn't pass him back, but she argued her point a little bit, but it didn't get anywhere. But that was the biggest argument that I can ever remember. And so the daughter came to me later and she said, "Did she have to do what Daddy said?" I said, "You sure do. He said it and that's it." But after a while, a mother's voice, wears down. But we never had too many arguments about anything. And money, we never argued about money because that's all we had and we had to make it do. And he never was demanding for special clothes or anything except his work clothes. He had to have those. Some of them got through the work down there, like his work shoes and that sort of thing, because they had a certain standard you had to go by. But other than that, there was no... Didn't make it, like I said, it didn't make any difference what I did with my... Of course, I'm not extravagant, but I do love to buy yarn and crochet and knit, and he didn't care. He never said a word. A lot of men would raise the roof to go by to have all that yarn around there, but not him. He was very, very even about it. But there were times he'd have an argument about, like, say, I'd want him to fix something around the house. Well, he couldn't do that, and I said, "You can too. There isn't a thing in the world you can't do if you set your mind to it." And I remember that. One, we had he wasn't going to do what I wanted out there. He did his way, and I tore it all out and threw it on the floor. Well, it laid there for days. Finally came in one day, "Well, what did I want?" Well, I showed him. He did it, and it's still there. He could do it. But he used to think I thought he could do things, you know, that he couldn't. But if he can't do it, that's another story. But if anything went wrong with the water faucet or the toilet or drains, he could care about all that. And like a lot of people have arguments, but now my husband, I never picked up a wet towel or a dirty sock after him in all the 54 years we were married. And he took a bath and everything was picked up and taken to the washing machine. I never picked up after him. But I'll tell you one argument we had, it was funny, so it was funny yet. I had a electric washing machine, but it had a wringer. And you had to soggle the clothes up and down and run to the wringer. Well, after I'd had that one hard fix done, my daughter insisted that I have a washing machine and it didn't do that automatic. So I sold the old wringer washing machine to a neighbor. And he got mad about that. He thought we should have kept that. If he could operate that, well, he couldn't do nothing with this other thing. Now, we really had it. I went on for a number of years. I never just sold that old ring of washing machine. It's still funny. No, he ever used it, but I don't ever remember.
How did your daughter feel about you
working with Jessica? Oh, I don't think she thought anything about it, except the thing was that it was hard on her. She had no friends except these cousins, and they were older than she. And, of course, she didn't get the attention that she had before. But as you know, I don't recall anything much about it.
You told me before that your son was in the service.
Mm-hmm. He's in the Air Force.
How was that for you?
Terrible. He was, when he was going to college, he was taking business administration. And when they put him in the service, instead of giving him something like that, they put him in radio work. And he didn't know anything about fixing radios, but he was business administration. He was learning to be an accountant. They didn't get anything like that. And he was sent overseas to the Hebrides Islands. And it rained over there. So when it rained at night, the underneath the cots was flooded, you know. And of course, I think he was far enough away from all the shooting and stuff. I don't know, but then every now and then he's worried about it. Other than the fact that he was away like that, you know, so bad.
Did it have any effect on your work at Douglas?
No. Because I felt that if he had to serve, I had to serve. Because my husband was in the shipyard defense work, you know.
Did your husband ever talk about when he was in the shipyard?
Yes. He complimented them, not anything against them. He said what they did, he thought they did, you know, real well. But to do anything against them, I mean, he wasn't.
Do you have an idea if there were
been
many women working around
him? Well, there were quite a few. They did various things. Because I'm not being down there, I didn't know too much, but I know there was this one woman that was in their carpool, and he always spoke very well of her. But my husband wasn't the type to criticize women, you know, about, because if they were capable, well, it was all right with him. Now, I suppose if they weren't capable and they were sloughing off or something, he'd have had something, but I mean, you know, evidently they weren't any good doing that. There was a lot of things that he was more like a rough carpenter. He did carpenter work, and in the line of work he was, there wasn't much women. Now, the women would ride those little, what's called carts, the little motor things around, and deliver parts and that sort of thing. And